There he is. There he is. There he is. There I am. There you are. I'm here. You're there. Okay, now we're here. Now we're here. Now we're here. Good to see everybody. Nice to be back. My name is Dean. Good to see you today. It is Wednesday, hump day. It is like, what, end of January now? We've just got through the Super Bowl. Hope everybody had a good weekend last weekend. We've had a few podcasts this week. Bit of a smattering, if you will. And it's always nice to touch base. I always like touching base. Don't get perverted, people. I always like touching base with my mentor, my touchstone. We like to talk about reprogramming, what we've learned, the business of the day, if you will. It is my favorite half hour to an hour of the week, depending on how much time this man gives me. Please welcome a Canadian institution, the voice and conscience of media in Canada, from the Charles Adler podcast, aptly titled, because it's him, Charles Adler, ladies and gentlemen. It's not just a clever name. You're on your own podcast. I think that's cool.
Yeah, we're co-partnering today. Partner, before we do anything else, we're just about touching base. And so I've got a skill testing question.
Sure.
Have you ever touched base without Mazola?
No. No, good. Always. That's always good. With the Mazola or that's a little good. Bit of Crisco.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you got to.
Depends on what you have handy.
Like, no, it just, you have to, you have to have shortening.
Some kind of viscose material. Yes.
Humor is the best lubricant of life. I wanted to mention that for those people who are watching, I realize most people are listening, but for those
you know, they have
watching,
avocado oil and coconut oil now too.
There are many ways to get it real.
Yes.
So for those people who are watching, there's two or three people watching while there are millions listening.
God, I love you,
but for the two or three people who are watching, you may be wondering why I'm wearing glasses. It's because I'm fundamentally insecure. And here's the deal.
That's a really nice way to open up podcasts, is with the vulnerability of claiming insecurity.
Well, everyone wants authenticity. Yeah. And if you can fake authenticity, the rest is downhill.
Well, that's so I'm fundamentally Conservative Party of Canada and MAGA. Yeah.
All right. I was wondering whether it would take you more than 2 minutes, and it did. 2 minutes and 30 seconds before you took your first shot at my former party.
Yeah. You're
in welcome. Any case, recovering conservatives and others. In case you're wondering why I'm wearing the glasses, fundamental insecurity, I read somewhere recently that if you're worried about saying dumb stuff, partly because you're enabled by your partner who loves saying dumb stuff and has made millions of dollars saying dumb stuff, and you're concerned about it, maybe even a little insecure, wear glasses. It adds 10 IQ points to the delivery.
I have a feeling that might be true, actually. I don't know if you actually read it, but like when I see someone in glasses, I'm like, they're probably a little bit smarter than most people because they're wearing glasses. And there's a reason why I wear these. It's for vision. Right. And also so I give the impression that I'm much more intellectual than I am.
Sure. Full transparency.
Yeah.
These are not prescription glasses.
Are there magnifiers? You got the readers on? Yeah, you bring everything closer. Dude, we're not getting younger. It's okay.
Apparently, after you're 40, if you're on a screen, it's helpful. I won't say what number this is because it could be anywhere from, you know, 1 to 3 1/4. It's somewhere in that range.
You got some 12s on? Is that why you don't want to talk about it? You got some 13s?
I could watch this. I could still.
Oh, you look beautiful.
Sort of function without them. But in any case, that's what that's about. Now, I was hoping that you could get Elvis in here, and that's all right, Mama, because I know you're after a discussion of my mom, who just turned 90.
Yeah, we've got a lot of stuff to get to today, and I want to start with your mother, right? Because you put out a tweet. You and I, a lot of people, you think you just podcast with a guy, you just find common interest. No. Charlie and I are very, very good friends, and we have these... You call them deep philosophical conversations about family, culture, upbringing, where we're from. And it's sometimes these conversations last for an hour and a half. So you put out a tweet the other day because Mrs. Adler, the beautiful Mrs. Adler, is not only here. She turned a resilient 90 the other day.
Yeah. She overcame all the odds. I'm going to make this really brief because some of it is a bit of a downer. But when I say that Mrs. Adler is my hero, I mean it. in the sense that she is an actual hero. She actually did save people when she was just 10 years old. Once again, a lot of the story's a downer. So I'm going to give you the Coles Notes, or for American friends, the Cliff's Notes version.
I don't want, by the way, this is not a downer. This is an incredible story. And I've been fortunate enough to have you have shared this with me privately. But I think that this is a story that I think a lot of people either don't know, obviously don't know about your beautiful mother who's 90 and what she was not only capable of, what she did, not just for you and her family, but for so many other people. And you and I have not had this conversation publicly. So you don't, you know, buddy, don't preface it with like, hey, I don't want to bore you with the details, because these details are not only historically important, they're really important to share.
Okay, the background is rather gloomy and dark. It's World War II. It's the Holocaust. And Adolf Hitler is in a hurry in 1944 to get rid of as many Jews as possible, specifically Adolf Eichmann, who was the architect of his extermination policy. The so-called Jewish question was to be resolved by Adolf Eichmann and the SS. So it's 1944, and there are many people who already have been killed, but the fastest way to get to another 500,000, maybe 800,000 or so, is to round up the Hungarian Jews. So they were the last to be put on the trains to Auschwitz. There was a heroic action that was saving many of those Jews who were in the Budapest ghetto, which is where my mother was living. Her mother had been dragged away to a different concentration camp, and fortunately, she survived. But my mom was only 10 years old when she was in the Budapest ghetto fending for herself. She could pass. When I say could pass, meaning she didn't have any specific Jewish characteristics that would make people in the city where Jews weren't allowed to think that she was a Jew. She wasn't visibly Jewish. She looked like, you know, everyone else. And so because she was able to pass, she would sneak into the city and go to some of the open markets, what I guess today we would call flea markets and farmer markets, and she would trade. So she would buy and sell food. She would buy and sell clothing. She would buy and sell all sorts of sundries that were needed by people who were in the ghetto. They may not have been at that point in a concentration camp, but you can just imagine how they were forced to live. So my mother was helpful. And then, of course, it came time for a specific operation to take place involving a person who's an honorary Canadian citizen. You may hear the name Raoul Wallenberg from time to time. Sure. He was a Swedish diplomat, and this Swedish diplomat was able to get thousands of passports, Swedish passports, into the hands of Hungarian Jews in the ghetto. Not all the Jews, unfortunately, but several thousand were rescued. And he had couriers. He had certain people who, once again, could pass, who were able to pass through the city, outside the city, inside the city, and get passports into the hands of people. And my mom, my 10-year-old mom, was one of them. I have no idea how many people she rescued. Could be hundreds. Could be thousands. It's not something that she will ever admit to, because of massive guilt. She couldn't get passports into the hands of everyone, and couldn't get passports into the hands of some people who were related to her, who were aged 2 to 5. So that's the short version. And Dean, I'm sorry if I didn't give you the much longer version of the story, but I think people get the point that my mom is my hero because she is a hero.
You know, and I didn't know that story when I met you. And when you told me about it, it comes with obviously all kinds of flotsam and jetsam, right? You know, you grow up in a home, you know, some stories you hear from your parents, some you don't. Kind of you're always curious about where you came from, curious about your parents' lives. But that a lot of that information about your beautiful mother, who, by the way, let me just have a little picture of her. Look at how happy she looks. Look at this. You put this on Twitter. Happy birthday, that heroic woman who saved my life, gave me life, saved my life, and inspired me to speak from the heart. This is January 29, 2024. Mom is 90. Wow. Look at that. Look at that smile. She's got the patented Adler grin. I love it.
And she's the greatest. You know, people over the years have been far too generous with me, rewarding me for being a storyteller. I am nothing like my mom. My mom is the greatest storyteller that I ever met. And despite the hard times and despite the harsh times and everything she endured from the time she was a baby, before this horrible story of the Holocaust. My mother never got to see her dad because my grandmother was pregnant with my mom when her husband died in his early 20s. A typhus epidemic was sweeping through the village. They didn't have the kind of medicine they needed. He died very, very young, in his 20s. And so my mother was in the womb at the time. Mm-hmm. So when she emerged, she was without a father. Being without mm-hmm. a father in a village in that part of the world at that time was very, very difficult. So my grandmother decided that she couldn't possibly feed my mom, couldn't afford to live there as a single mother, as a widowed woman. So she took my mother out of that village and into the city. And that's why my grandmother and my mother survived, because all the Jews who remained in that village, all of them were put on the train for Auschwitz, 100% liquidation, as they would say, of the Jews in that village. So the death of my maternal grandfather allowed my mother and my grandmother to live. The mm-hmm. death of my maternal grandmother, of my maternal grandfather, is one of the reasons for my own existence. So, I mean, I went to an MIT computer scientist a number of years ago when I was working in Boston, and I gave him just slivers of my life story, asking him, what are the chances of my own existence because of all of these interconnections and all of this weaving that took place and all of these people who were just survivors in a situation where almost everyone around them did not survive. And the computer scientist said, look, I'm not a religious person, but the fact that you were alive, the fact that you exist, I have to call it a miracle.
Yeah. Scientists, you know, if you're not a child of the Holocaust, scientists say that there's a 1 in 400 quadrillion chance that you were born. Right. So, you know, times that by a compound of 10. If you can even do that. You didn't come into a lot of this information younger either, right? I mean, this is information about your family, about your mom, about your history.
Yeah, my mother denied all this, and yeah. She will still deny it. There's no point in trying
to... Too much
to
hurt, or is it she just doesn't have the zero pride, zero...
No,
no,
it just she does not think of herself as a hero at all, and there's residual survivor's guilt and guilt that she couldn't help everybody. And specifically couldn't help some people who were tiny nieces, babies, nephews of hers. I think that we can read about, you know, Hitler killed 1.5 million children, and we can read about it. I think sometimes the numbers almost numb us. Unless you were connected personally to any of those children, It's just not the same. You can watch movies like Sophie's Choice and the Holocaust and many others, but you never really understand it unless you've been part of that story. And of course, as far as yours truly is concerned, I was part of the story in the sense that I saw the residual effects that are lasting. Mm-hmm. You know, you see my mother smile in that photo, and that's, you know, there are many, many, many photos of her where she's not smiling. Those photos have been burned. Mm. But, you know, my mother has suffered, you know, impacts of the Holocaust. We now call it, you know, PTSD. My father had it, my grandmother, everyone I knew, uncles and aunts, and just the basics, severe mood swings. And you just never knew what kind of, they never knew what kind of mood they'd be in at any given moment, and the way they would sometimes react to news and overreact. When I was very, very young, every time my mother saw a police officer, and these police officers were Mounties, and they were OPP, QPF, Sûreté Québec, QPP in English, you know, Quebec Provincial Police or Montreal Police or the police services in the various suburbs of Montreal. And in the initial years of living in Montreal, my mother was, I guess, 1957, so she was just 23 when we landed in Canada. Mm. And every time she saw a cop for like well into her 30s and early 40s, she got she was frightened. Mm-hmm. Not because she actually thought rationally that these cops were out to get her, out to help, you know, liquidate her family, but that's what cops were doing when she was very young. So just
men in uniform when she was younger and in former years, they were SS Einsatzgruppen.
Yeah.
They were,
and I can say this, that fortunately my mother reacted absolutely the opposite to seeing Canadian uniforms. And one of my, you know, admonitions for my maternal grandmother who was rescued from the concentration camp was to always be kind, be generous, most of all, be grateful to anyone in a Canadian uniform, anyone in a British uniform, anyone in an American uniform. In other words, the Allies. Without them, they wouldn't be alive. And so that's always, you know, been a special place in my mother's heart and my heart. So when we see Canadian forces, it we get highly emotional. And I've probably said this before to you, Dean, that when I see Canadian forces, whether it's, I still say the Gardens, you know, I grew up with Maple Leaf Gardens, the Montreal Forum, but, you know, the ACC, the Scotiabank Center, whatever they're calling it these days, Scotiabank Arena. So when I see Canadian forces honored at the Scotiabank Arena or the Bell Center or the MTS Center, now called the Canada Life Center in Winnipeg or any of the others, Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver, doesn't matter. When I see Canadian forces honored, I stand for the anthem. I stand for Canadian forces. There are certain things that were just inculcated into me from the very beginning by some grateful little people who managed to survive the worst bloodbath in history.
Mm. The Dean Blundell Show is brought to you by factcheck.io. Factcheck.io, makers of the world's most comprehensive fact-checking software, that have been very busy building some software so that you can fact check anything that you read. It doesn't matter if it's got a URL, you'll be able to fact check it. Alternative sources, origins, whether or not it was an organic or inorganic campaign, whether or not you can trust the people that are putting out the information so that you can give yourself agency over information in the age of disinformation. Again, want to beta test their product? They're going to launch it in the next month or two. Go to factcheck.io today. F-A-K-T-C-H-E-K. .io. Back to the show.
Can I ask you a question? First of all, I want to thank you for even just sharing parts of your story, your heritage, where you're from, how important your mother is. Obviously, happy birthday, Mrs. Adler. She's 90. That's a big milestone. But is she aware of Sharpe's attack? She's aware of the anti-Semitic sentiment that seems to be gaining ground. She's obviously, you know, someone that watches the news. She obviously consumes information, and she's obviously aware of this rise in anti-Semitism, these protests. Mm-hmm. And and after, you know, 80 years, 75 years, 80 years, you know, and we talk about PTSD when she sees police officers or when she sees people in uniform because of how she grew up. Do you guys talk about any of
None of that
stuff gets talked about.
We don't talk about the war. We don't talk about anti-Semitism. Mm. We don't talk about any of these.
You talk about the rise in anti-Semitism today. Nothing discussed.
No, we don't.
But I mean, it's funny because even just listening to you now, Chuck, knowing you and knowing what's been important to you in terms of content, when it comes to educating people as to what's going on in Israel, whether it's with Gaza, what's going on here. I mean, it all starts to become crystal clear, almost to the point where I think, you know, I respect you even more because of the line that you toe, trying to explain this to people without emotion.
Yeah, I try to explain it without emotion, but I lead a double life as far as my parents are concerned because of everything they've been through. Many topics are absolutely off limits. So I don't just, and everything that I've discussed with you today with respect to my mother, I never discuss with my mother. And my grandmother insisted that's the way it has to be many years ago. Her number one rule is to never, ever bring anything up related to the war, related to the ghetto, related to anything that has involved her emotionally. You know, and it's a real simple admonition from my grandmother. You know, be grateful to your mother. She gave you life. Be grateful to your mother. She saved your life. She's the one who put me in the backpack and said to my father, you know, we're getting out of here. And you're going to take our son out of here. I'll be your scout, but you're the one who's going to be carrying our son. And she said it very, very clearly to him. If you choose not to, I'm going to strap it to my own back because I'm taking the kid out of this. And I'm not going to use the word that she used for the country she was born in. She loved her country very much, but she knew that her country had become toxic. There was an opportunity, a very thin opportunity to try to get some freedom from that country and try to get me some oxygen because that's what she was most concerned about. All the cities that were behind the Iron Curtain under communist rule had the worst air in the world, very polluted. You know, the coal, 24 hours in all of these factories, all these homes, coal, 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 no filters at all. And the pollution was attacking my system. I had pneumonia three times as a child, nearly died three times. And so my mother felt it wasn't just about opportunities and God knows what with living under authoritarianism. So she wanted to save my life on that basis. I had no idea whether I'd ever have a future because of the politics and the oppression and the authoritarianism and, yes, the anti-Semitism. But beyond that, it was just physically difficult for me to live there. And so my mother was bound and determined to get me out. My father was a little more cautious about fleeing the country. But my mother was the CEO of the family, always was, always will be. And she insisted that he do it. And he obeyed, as it were. And my mother has always said, my father passed a few years ago. My mother always said that my father was the strongest man in the world and the most honest man in the world and the best man in the world, because he was able to go along with her being the CEO, go along with her independent spirit, trust her good instincts. But, you know, why wouldn't you trust her instincts? Her instincts were incredible, achieving all sorts of important benefits for people, including including my dad. My dad would never have owned a little store if it wasn't for my mother. He would have died as a very young man in a toxic sweatshop. He was, you know, behind the sewing machine for years, and he was getting sick himself, as a lot of people were in the old sweatshops, the old factories, and the garment district of Montreal. And my mother said, you're getting the hell out of here, and we're going to scrape together whatever we have to have a store. You're going to have your own store. You're still going to work 80 hours a week, but we're going to have a ventilation system in your store, and you're not going to be getting sick. So that was something that was interesting, whether it was my father or me. My mother was always concerned about getting us better air. And so both my father and me are grateful. My father's passed now, but both of us spent a lifetime of gratitude to the woman who turned 90 years old this week. Happy birthday, Mom.
Happy birthday, Mrs. Adler. You know, that is the ultimate sacrifice we're talking about, when you are willing to say, hey, I'm taking my kid and we're getting out of here, and I don't care what you do. You're either coming with me or you're not. But I'm going to leave everything I know. I'm going to leave my lineage, my culture, my home, because I love this little thing.
And, you know, they had no idea where they would end up.
But did you ever look at him in like February when you were like 30 and go, hey, how come we couldn't have immigrated to Miami?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We were on it. We were probably on our way to the States. That's where most people wanted to go. And some of my relatives, that is where they went. And for whatever reason, you know, there was a story about the person who was the interpreter, because none of my relatives, my parents, they only spoke Hungarian. So there was an interpreter for U.S. immigration, naturally someone who could speak Hungarian. And apparently my father didn't answer the question correctly, because my father was so whipped into never saying anything bad about the government. I mean, he was raised with fascism and communism, and you just don't say anything, especially to a person in uniform, about the government. And this person in uniform, an American uniform, asked my father how he felt about the government. And my father just gave the answer he would always give in Hungary. I have no problem with the government, because that was just an instinctive answer. When you're applying for refugee status, that's the wrong.
Kind of tells the opposite story.
It's the wrong answer.
Back there. Yeah.
So my relatives, you know, my American relatives, you know, laughed at my father for a long time, because he got that answer. He got that answer wrong. But my father said to them that the joke's on you. We ended up in a better country. You know, my father, Canada gave us a second chance. They didn't hold it against my father that he, you know, stumbled obviously stressed, got the wrong answer. He got the right answer. They gave the right answer when the Canadian authorities asked him how he felt about the country that he came from. And he said, well, it's a dangerous country, and that's why I'm here. Still didn't want to say anything bad about the government. He just said, it's dangerous there, and that's why we're here. And that was good enough for Canada. And so my father literally kissed Canadian soil, as did my mom, as did yours truly, more than once. I once had a program director, and he'll remain nameless. And he heard me tell that story on the air about kissing Canadian soil. And he said to me, Chuck, I wish you wouldn't say that. Nobody believes you. I said, I don't care if anybody believes me. You know, I have made a decent living. I put food on the table for yours truly and many, many, many other people, many jobs created and all the rest of it. Very proud of that. Selling a lot for advertisers, helping their employees. So I'm extremely proud of everything I've done. And I just tell it the way it is. I tell you the truth. Some of it is funny. Some of it is ugly, but it's the truth. And the truth is, yes, I've kissed Canadian soil several times. And this program director said, I don't believe you. And that was one of the several times I've told my bosses to go F their hats. I don't care.
Kindly go fornicate themselves.
Yeah. Go make love to your ball cap.
Yeah.
Without Mazzola.
I know who you're talking about, and that guy has a lifetime supply of Zoloft on his nightstand. As always, the Dean Blundell Show is brought to you by our friends at factcheck.io. Factcheck.io. Do you believe? The good people at FactCheck are a quorum of software professionals, psychological professionals, journalists that have been very busy building some software so that you can fact check anything that you read. It doesn't matter if it's got a URL, you'll be able to fact check it. Alternative sources, origins, whether or not it was an organic or inorganic campaign, whether or not you can trust the people that are putting out the information, and alternative sources. And there's going to be a weapon button too, where you can turn that information around and put it back out there accurately to combat disinformation. The good people at factcheck.io are right now testing their beta version of their free program. Yes, it will be free for anybody who wants to use it. They want to battle disinformation because it is a problem. Go to factcheck.io today, FACTCHEK.io, FACTCHEK.io. The world's most robust fact-checking disinformation software for news, social media, video, print, anything spoken word. These people are on the tip. And they use some of the finest software technology to be able to give you the advantage when it comes to getting agency back in your life, when it comes to information that you read. Go to factcheck.io today for more information. Sign up for the beta test, FACTCHEK.io. Anyway, you know, you can chase your origin story of Charles Adler, the reprogramming of Charles Adler, but there are some things that have always been very important to you. We talk about being reprogrammed. We talk about learning more. We talk about changing. We talk about educating ourselves along the way. And the education I'm getting today speaks to a couple of things that are very important to you. Why you have decided to speak out against authoritarian talking points, well, it makes perfect sense to me now. Why you're trying to raise that flag for authoritarian stuff makes sense to me now. And I'll tell you the other thing that makes sense to me is your respect of women, strong women.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you know,
that comes naturally. Nobody.
Yeah.
You had to send me to a seminar. To respect.
Growing up with Mrs. Adler, who not only wore the pants, she also had the CEO hat on. She had the, you know, the
and
the
my shovel. And my maternal grandmother, who raised who was widowed very young and had to be the, you know, we would say in the old days we had to wear the pants in the family. She had to take care of my mom and a number of other people. Yeah, she was also. Very
a boss with a capital B.
Neither of them ever would call themselves a feminist, but they were, I guess they were feminists long before there was feminism.
Totally. I mean, and there's nothing more powerful than a woman who's able to set that family compass, right? And I believe that. Like my, you know, and I look at it from a different perspective. Obviously, my mom is my hero. She's like, I think she's perfect. I've never seen her do anything wrong. I feel the same way about my girlfriend. I'm like, you're perfect for me. I don't know. I can't find anything wrong with you. And she's a boss with a capital B. My mom is a boss with a capital B.
We are. Yeah. We are attracted to strong women. And it's
not
a great surprise that many of them happen to be, you know, bosses of whatever businesses they're involved in.
The incredibly successful, which brings me to the Taylor Swift conversation.
Oh my God.
I've got nothing but respect for this one. Like absolutely nothing but respect for what she's done, how she's apparently been able to stay true to herself. She seems like she's just a normal human being who deals in these massive amounts of money and gives people what she can. She gave her tour guys like $55 million in extra money this year. Every city she goes in, she gives people food banks enough money to be able to operate for like literally years. You know, she's a billionaire. She's the biggest pop star in the world. She's dating Travis Kelce. He's going to the Super Bowl. We all saw that this weekend. And the backlash of people, I don't know what their problem is. Maybe they're mad they're not Travis Kelce. Maybe they're intimidated by strong women. But your stance, my stance, the stance of people like Colin Cowherd, the stance of people who are like, let's get fucking real. Pardon my language, but let's get real here. And let's talk about how people are intimidated by that strong woman.
I'm not saying that everyone who's part of the right-wing ecosystem, everyone who supports so-called strong men like Donald Trump and Viktor Orban and others. I'm not saying and want to bash Travis and Taylor. I'm not saying that all of them are dickless wonders. You know, that wouldn't be fair. But I would say that there are a number of men in our society, for whatever reason, feel alienated, feel very lonely, and don't have strong women, in many cases don't have any women in their lives, and they have a great big chip on their shoulder about women. You know, many of them feel that the revolution that's taken place, the social revolution in the last number of years, where women have gotten rights, where women are able to burst through the glass ceiling and they can be premiers and CEOs and all the rest of it. There are a lot of men out there who feel that this has come at the expense of men, at their expense, and I just have this sneaking suspicion that all of this incredible rage out there among some men who are, whether it's part of the Canadian right wing or the American right wing or the Hungarian right wing or whatever, I just have a feeling that that is a part of it. Not all, but a significant percentage of men are angry all the time because of their 24/7 frustration with being lonely and being without women in their lives, without women partners. And I think someone like Taylor Swift and the whole Taylor and Travis thing,
just a constant reminder of their loneliness.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. And I think they're so lonely they don't even know it. And I can sense it. The ones who aren't bots, who are on, whether they're following you, Dean, or myself, or many others, the rage that they exhibit in their replies is so irrational. And I don't think it's a great surprise that some of these same men who are constantly raging about people like Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce are the same ones who rage about Trudeau. I'm not trying to take Trudeau off the hook for the, you know, scandals and some of the other stuff. That's not my point at all. But the irrational raging, I believe that if Trudeau looked like an average guy, or maybe even less than average, like a Pierre Poilievre, you know, I think if Trudeau was, you know, doggy,
less than average.
What's a nice way of saying it? You know, not exactly handsome.
Yeah, if he was ugly.
If he was butt ugly. Okay, there, I said it.
Fugly, if you will.
All right. So if he was an ogre, yeah. If he was the guy who looks like the guy who never gets to dance with a girl and all that, I think that he wouldn't have the some of the problem he does. I'm not saying he'd be ahead in the polls. That's not my point at all. Many, many PMs have a hard time being ahead in the polls if they've been in power for the better part of nearly a decade. So, I mean, I get all of the obvious political science 101 stuff. But I just think the incredible animus toward Trudeau, just like the incredible animus toward Taylor Swift, I think there's something that some guys have a problem with when it comes to strong people who are also very attractive people. It brings out the worst in them.
Just in the ugly, lazy dudes, right? Like that's sort of like what we're talking about here. It's an IQ issue. It's a mental health, emotional issue. It's all of those things. But you point to irrationality or, you know, not being reasonable. There, you should be able to, in any conversation, any tweet thread, anything you're doing, whether it's digital or visual, whether it's in person or not, you should be able to draw a straight line in a normal conversation with normal people from statement to answer to question to statement. It makes some sense. But But when you're like, hey, congratulations, Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. What a run, right? And right. someone's like, shut up, you pedophile. Or shut up, you pedophile. Or you just drank X amount of this guy's stuff. Like I got yesterday about Trudeau as a big picture. I was like, you guys got to be kidding me. you can really kind of set your clock, rest your hat, put your coat on a coat hook on the idea that it's not real. Number one, and number two, if it is, that person is just a lonely, sad, incredibly jealous person. And I actually had a conversation with someone the other day about this, where I was like, do you understand this? And he had a good point. It was a buddy of mine. His name's Chop. And he's like, you know what I think? And I'm like, sometimes this stuff, like the simplest answer makes sense. Like we don't need to go into how lonely guys are. It's like, there are so many people out there who hate their lives so much that they look at the world's biggest, incredibly attractive pop star dating one of the best football players, best tight ends to ever play the game, who's also incredibly successful. And they look at them and they're like, that just means my life sucks extra.
Yeah.
Like, and that, and Chop said it, and I'm like, you know what? That makes actually more sense than anything else. It's just their lives suck so hard in some cases, you know, and you're much nicer explaining it. Oh, there's just lonely guys.
What makes me laugh, I'm sorry, I have to laugh. What makes me laugh is that they try to cloak this with the dumbest things in the world. Like they keep talking about, I'm talking about the American right wing predominantly right now. They try to cloak this in something related to public health matters and freedom by saying that Travis did a commercial for Pfizer.
Yeah.
And so you got Aaron Rodgers, who didn't want to take the vax, who calls Travis Mr. Pfizer. Yeah. And you get like gazillions of right wingers. Yeah, he's with Big Pharma. He took money from Big Pharma and he took money to do a commercial where he was promoting vaccination. This guy was actually encouraging people to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, wait a minute. Yeah. That's a problem. You know, there may have been, I don't know how many thousands of people got vaccinated because Travis did an ad and that's supposed to make him a bad guy.
Dude, but here's the thing. It's like, it's the only thing they can hang their hat on is anything COVID related, right? So they'll figure out a way to tie Travis Kelce to some conspiracy theory because he was a spokesperson for Pfizer and he told everybody to get vaccinated. Aaron Rodgers is a spokesperson for crazy incels. So everybody's like, yeah, let's line up behind Aaron Rodgers. But it's any way they can attack some kind of religious or wellness message to it. Like, hey, if you support Taylor Swift, because there are these two. Have you seen these two conspiracy theories? I got to show them to you. These are unbelievable. It's hard to imagine. Taylor Swift conspiracy number one, that Taylor Swift is working with Roger Goodell to announce her Biden endorsement during the Super Bowl. If you remember that. Yeah. And that was a big one. Jack Posobiec and Vivek Ramaswamy, whatever the guy's name is. That's the one that they propagated. But the one that I love the most is this one. Taylor Swift is a satanic agent of witchcraft sent here by Satan to keep God's chosen one, Donald J. Trump, out of the White House. And the linchpin for all of those, and this is what I love, is the vaccine.
Yeah.
That is, and so it's like, you know, you look at it from a political opportunity standpoint, as ridiculous and crazy as it is, you've got a MAGA movement, or in Canada, the Maple MAGA movement, filled with those kinds of people who are like, you know what? I buy it. This is a whole Biden, like, satanic conspiracy theory. And it goes all the way back to the origin story of vaccines and science.
And they're also knocking Taylor Swift because she's going to be doing a concert in Tokyo 2 days before the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And the Super Bowl's in Vegas. And so the minute she leaves the stage in Tokyo, she's getting in a plane, which will fly for whatever it is, 14 hours, 16 hours, whatever it is, from Tokyo to Vegas. And so they're saying, this liberal hypocrite is going to be burning a lot of fuel to fly. doesn't this tell you how hypocritical the liberals are? They're, you know, they talk a good game about lowering emissions, but they get on airplanes.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
The chemtrails. I have never once heard Taylor Swift complain about chemtrails. Never once heard her talk about being a climate warrior or a liberal. Never once heard her claim her political stance or cultural stance other than, hey, let's pick a president that's good for the people. Never once. But to your point, Yeah. Why not throw climate change in there? Right? Why not?
And then the same, right wingers, they're not all incels. I have no idea how many. But the point is, these people who hate beautiful women, strong women, unless they're, working for Fox and obviously raking their leaves, but the ones who aren't working for Fox, the ones who aren't trying to become vice president, vice presidential running mate for Donald Trump, like the governor of South Dakota and some others. But the Taylor Swifts of this world, it's not just about, the climate change business. It's also the fact that they believe that Taylor Swift was involved in a conspiracy when she was messaging on Twitter and other social media platforms, encouraging young people to vote. She encouraged young people to register. I have no idea how many young people have registered to vote because of Taylor Swift. But the fact that she's encouraging people to vote, that means there's something wrong with her. And she'd only be encouraging people to vote if she thought they were going to vote for Biden. She never said vote for Biden. She never done any of that. And then the other problem, of course, is that they have a problem with the NFL because they feel the NFL is showing too much of Taylor Swift. So, they're saying things like, I just want to watch the football game.
She was on my screen for an hour. Do you know what the math is? Can I show you the math?
Absolutely.
How long she was on TV for? This is brilliant. Amount of time CBS allocated to showing Taylor Swift at the AFC Championship. The game time runtime was 3 hours, 9 minutes. Taylor Swift was shown seven times for a total of 44 seconds. That means she was not on television for 99.61% of the broadcast.
No.
99. People making, serving, and eating crab cakes were a close second to 27 seconds. Dolphins, right, sharks, and jellyfish at the local aquarium, 24 seconds. Patrick Mahomes' wife was on TV for 10. Ravens coach brother John Harbaugh, 5 seconds. John Harbaugh's dad, 4 seconds. And that's what you got. Just so you know, and Colin Cowherd said it best, even though I'm not a Cowherd guy, just so you know, in an NFL three-hour broadcast, there are 18 minutes of action. 18 minutes. 18 minutes. So, for all of you people that said in your three-hour broadcast you want all football, you've never gotten it ever once. You've gotten 18 minutes in a three-hour time period.
Partner, I got a math issue here.
Yeah,
I think it's 18 minutes an hour
in runtime football.
Do they only have 18 minutes of ads in all 3 hours?
No. They've got 18 minutes of actual football being played.
Oh, yeah. Okay, no. But I think they've got about 18 minutes of ads per hour.
Oh, something easily. Like that.
I could be off by a moment.
They got more ads. So you're not watching football when the ads are on.
You're not watching
football when football's on. And you're definitely not watching Taylor Swift when football's on.
So just so everyone knows, there are far more ads in a football game than actual running time. Anyway, the point is, if Taylor Swift gets somewhere between 25 and 55 seconds, it's very, very hard for people to be credible when they say, I just want to see the game. They see Taylor Swift and they get triggered. Taylor triggers them. And
totally.
I'm never going to find that unfunny. And the fact that we're not talking about a handful of people, but millions of people. And Fox News does entire segments on the Taylor and Travis conspiracy to elect Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why more people aren't laughing. Like, you see people that get really upset when this crazy shit happens, when there's like, here's a conspiracy theory about Taylor Swift and Satan. Witchcraft. That was another one. Witchcraft was a big one. There's like, she's totally, have I shown you this? This is incredible. Candace Taylor, she tweets yesterday, I tried to warn y'all back in October, the influence of Taylor Swift on our youth with witchcraft was demonic, evil, and Luciferian. No one listened. Of course, Satan wants to use her now to elect Joe back in the White House to destroy what's left of America. Then she says, and I love this, no surprise here. Listen, if any of that's true, that's a massive surprise.
Well,
that's a huge surprise.
The crazy conspiracy is that the NFL is doing whatever it can to make sure that the Kansas City Chiefs end up in the Super Bowl. And the reason I find that also hilarious is the Kansas City Chiefs are going to the Super Bowl for the fourth time in the last 5 years. So, like, does it take the NFL to push them into the Super Bowl? Do they not have a record for? Anyway, with every other theory, it simply rests on one leg of a three-legged stool, and that's the most important leg of any conspiracy theory: the absolute desire for the believers to believe without evidence.
Yeah.
And that's why sometimes some of us get a little crazy. Go, wait a minute, there's no evidence. That what's most important about all of these theories is that we people who want to hate on Taylor Swift do not require evidence. They just see her and boom.
You know what I was going to say? I was going to bring up another ideology that doesn't require any evidence or proof, but I'm not going to do that today. I'm going to end the podcast here because you've been working with me on not doing that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. God bless you. God bless you, my son.
Hey, dude, if he was real, I'd take it.
Not being a Judas today. thank you. Thank you.
Charles Adler, happy birthday to Mrs. Adler. I want to thank her. Now, Mrs. Adler, if you're looking at me, and I know you're not, but if you can see me, I want to thank you for my friend. Thank you for bringing me Charles Adler. Thank you for smuggling him out of Hungary in that burlap sack. Thank you for giving him to Canada. Thank you for the gift that is that man. He is my friend, and I'm very grateful. So thank you, Mrs. Adler, and happy birthday to you. And, dude, thank you for taking time today.
Thank you. God bless my mom, and God bless every member of the Canadian Forces, and every parent, and everyone else who supports our forces. And God bless the memory of the forces that helped people like my family, the Adler family, rescue them in World War II, and continue to do great work around the world. When you see a Canadian uniform, let them know from Uncle Chuck here that he and his family are very, very grateful for their service in uniform. And I love you all. Thank you.
There you go. Charles Adler. Really appreciate you being here. His podcast is called The Charles Adler Show, the Charles Adler Podcast, available anywhere you get your fine podcasts. And it's one of the best. It is popularization. It's explaining things. He's got a heart. And listen, when you go through a podcast like this, you get an identity of a gentleman who's very familiar with authoritarian talking points. I want you to follow him on Twitter at Charles Adler. I want you to listen to his counsel. Not just you who's confused about the way things work in this world, but confused about what you're hearing and what you're seeing. That man has the ability to be able to sluice through it and be able to tell you what's really going on. And it's one of the things I appreciate the most about you. Charles, great to see you, my friend. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Anytime. Charles Adler, ladies and gentlemen, his podcast is available anywhere you get your fine podcasts. I suggest you do so. Everybody needs a podcast conscience. That man's mine. I'm just lucky that I have his phone number. Thank you to Charles. Thank you to everybody who's taking part in this podcast today just by listening, watching. You can get everything we do at Cryer Media, cryer.co. You can also go to YouTube, check us out on our YouTube channels. Dean Blundell Show, and of course, Cryer Media. This is Reprogrammed. My name is Dean. That is Charles. And thanks to our friends at Cantork for making this possible. Colin is one of the greatest guys in the world, and he's an incredible Canadian success story. Found himself out of work 20 years ago in the tool industry. We just did a huge podcast with him. His story of resilience, professionalism, and trust after 20 years of making Canada's most rugged, hardworking torque wrenches is awesome. Go and check him out. Go to cantork.com. They got a brand new website. You can sub to his podcast there as well, right on the front page. Check out all of his podcasts, check out all of his products, services, news, and you can contact them if you're looking for tool rentals, calibration services, repairs to custom fabrication and distribution opportunities. Cantork offers a complete range of services, products, making your one-stop shop destination for all of your bolting needs. Make sure you give him a call today by going to his website and get in touch with him. The little tab on the front of the website, it's a beautiful website. You can check out everything they do from boring machines and boring tunnels. These guys make torque wrenches nobody in the world makes for heavy industry around the world, nuclear, forestry, railroad, doesn't matter. Cantork.com. Visit them and check out Colin today. Brought to you as well by Muse Massage Spa. Download their new podcast called Muse on the Mic. It's a good one. They're clinical sexologists. On top of it, they're entrepreneurs and advocates for the sex work industry, and they actually operate Muse Massage Spa here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, 1290 Finch Avenue West, Unit 13 in Toronto. Give them a call today. 416-739-6668. Emily and Riley are your hosts and the owners of Muse Massage Spa and the hosts of Muse on the Mic. Make sure you get their download of their Patreon channel as well. They get a little greasy there too. They give the behind the scenes conversations, but everything they do is at cryer.co. Download their podcast again, anywhere you get your fine podcasts. Muse on the Mic. Again, Muse on the Mic, musemassagespa.com. And of course, brought to you by our friends at Gitch. Boxer briefs, pouch in the front, engineered for any level of performance as well as everyday life. You can use promo code GITCH3 when you go to Ed's Fine Imports. Listen, I love these underwear. I'm a big underwear guy. And everybody is like, you've got your Gitch. You've got your underwear. These are your Gitch. I promise you they are. Boxer briefs, made for moving, barely there fabric, super soft, keeping you cool with moisture wicking fabric as well. And the pouches are big enough for Canadian guys. Americans can buy them too. You just won't fill it out in the front. But you will get the best luxury boxer brief that is made today on the market. So check them out today. Go to edsfineimports.com. Promo code GITCH3 at checkout. Get your free pair of underwear, and you buy three or more and give them 15% with 15% off at checkout as well when you give them your email address. That's nice. It's not even going to spam you. Isn't that great? Anyway, thank you, everybody, for being part of the show. Thank you very much, Charles, for joining us today. Don't forget, everything we do is at crier.co, and make sure you rate and subscribe this podcast if you can. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye.
Hi, I'm Mercedes Nickel, four-time Winter Olympian and host of Dropping In, a podcast with Mercedes. This is a podcast where I interview a bunch of different people. I get the good, the bad, and the ugly, as well as I share my stories along the way. Now you can drop in at droppingin.com or subscribe on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. I'll see you soon.
I'm Matt Kundle, host of the Sound Off Podcast, the show about podcast and broadcast. Since 2016, we've been speaking with amazing people who have populated your ears for decades. Legendary broadcasters, research wizards, talent experts, podcasters, voice talent, almost 400 stories, all for free. Subscribe or follow the Sound Off Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at soundoffpodcast.com.